Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the January 14th edition of Commodity Week. The size of the U.S. corn crop just keeps shrinking. Well, the final numbers are in, and we'll try to decide what it means for the future of commodity prices today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossi from AgriSource Company. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Daryl Durkles, did the action in the commodity markets this week give you any reason at all not to believe demand is strong enough to support $6.50 old crop corn and $14.50 old crop soybeans?
You know, it really didn't tell us that the demand isn't strong enough, but I think there are some little subtleties around the edge when you look at some of the demand factors that suggest maybe we need to be a little careful and cautious up here.
Chuck Shelby?
I think it's impressive that the livestock price is high enough to support those guys, that they're not going to liquidate, Todd, so I think that's a key component at this time.
And Bill Mayer.
I guess the thing that impressed me this week is we had a pretty bullish report. We traded pretty much every day. It did hit limit there a little bit on Wednesday. But and this whole situation, we've continued to see the supply decline, and the market continues to go up higher to try to ration the demand, and it's really just been a pretty orderly market compared to what we saw a few years ago anyhow.
On the subject of the commodity reports, USDA now puts last year or last fall's yield at 152.8 bushels to the acre. That's actually down 1% from the previous month. Harvested acres, though, were up 0.2% at 81.4 million acres. Ending stocks at 745 million bushels. That's just a stocks-to-use ratio of 5.5%. We haven't seen one that small, well, since the mid-1990s, Dale.
Yeah, you go back to the 95-96 crop year when we saw that, you know, and people are going to start drawing some parallels probably to that when you start looking at the stocks-use ratio. But my question to people is the root cause or the reason that corn prices powered themselves all the way to 5.5 into the summer months. It was because the wheat market took off and went to 7.5. So I think it's important that people in the corn trade keep a running total on what's going on in wheat and what the price action is there, because that could have some implications on corn as we go through the winter and spring.
Why is that the case, and are you watching?
Well, you know, it still, when you look at the feed replacement relationship, wheat is quite a bit higher than corn at this point, but it'll have a sentimental impact if wheat starts to fade. And, you know, there is some subtle concern about the crop in Kansas, but when you really look at wheat, if we get out through the winter without any serious winter killer, really depends upon what kind of conditions we have in the spring. 96, we ended up with dry weather at that point. If we have decent rains in the spring this year, and it looks like we're going to have a good crop there, and it looks like we could end up having a good crop over in Russia and Ukraine this year, then it's going to be harder for wheat to go uphill, and wheat will probably fade, and that'll probably tend to put a lid on the corn market. So I think wheat's a key ingredient as we go forward in time.
Corn futures this week at a high of $6.52, a low at $5.97 1/4. Settlement price there at $6.48 3/4. They were up 53 3/4. December futures at $5.71 1/4 for the new crop, up 29 1/4 cents. Will wheat limit, do you think, the move in the corn?
I think the thing about wheat is there's a lot of wheat in the world, but a lot of it is feed quality wheat. You saw the problems in Australia. That's pretty significant over there. And I think the thing when we look forward is it's still an unknown. What caused these markets to get excited was crops continue to dwindle. So until we can prove we can grow another big crop, I think we're well supported until we see that actually happen.
What'd you make of those reports on Wednesday?
Well, I guess the surprise was in the soybeans, and I think we almost made a little bit of a switch to where the soybeans may have moved into the leadership spot, although I do agree with what Dale said as far as going forward here, the wheat's very important. We're in an acreage battle. I know that's a cliche, but that's really where we're headed here over the next couple of months is we've got to get more acres in production. Globally, we've got a tight situation, and we've got to cut back usage. Your first question there on demand was an important one. If you go back to the 08 crop year, that's what we did is we got to levels that we reduced demand in the case of corn by about 1 billion bushels that year from the May report to the January. We've got to reduce demand, and the key question is what level of price does that? Nobody has an answer to that, but we are starting to see some signs that maybe we're getting a little bit closer here.
Yeah, speaking of the soybeans, here's the way things came out in the USDA reports on Wednesday of this week, on the 12th day of January. They lowered yield to 43.5 bushels to the acre nationally. That was down 0.9% from their managed yield. And the last time around, beginning stocks at 151 were down 0.2%. Production then at 3.29 billion bushels, that is. And that gave us an ending stocks of just 140. So they were down pretty substantially when we got to the ending stocks.
Very, very tight numbers, and all commodities are all declining, and that leads us right into next year. The acreage battle, as Bill alluded to, is extremely important because when you tighten these numbers up as tight as they are, small changes, just like the yield wasn't changed that much, but it tightens it up so much. And then you have to wonder again, with world demand where it is and the value of the dollar, world buyers may be the component to how high this market may go if they continue to purchase from us, Todd. That's important to look forward in the next coming year.
In the bean pit this week, January futures a $14.26 high, the low at $13.49. January beans, $14.65. The settlement price was up 48 3/4. The November beans at $13.22, up 40 1/4 cents. I thought USDA did something fairly interesting with its average market cash price for the soybeans. They raised the bottom end to $11.20. That was up 50 cents. But they left the top end at $12.20.
You know, I think the one thing when you look at that, you know, there may be some indecision on their part as to how much we can really push into this. You know, you do see a few little subtle things around the edges and in Chinese demand for soybeans in particular that could be softening a little bit. And then one thing that the USDA finally recognized in their S&D numbers there is that for about 8 weeks now here in the U.S., crush margins have been what I'll call dismal, and they don't see much sign really of improving here. So you do see the little subtleties that demand may be softening just a bit, and that may be why they really didn't change the top side but did pull up the bottom side a little bit.
I want to do some comparison this year to last year, too, because we already talked about the stocks-to-use ratio for corn. It's now 5.5%. Last year, that stocks-to-use ratio was 13.1%. In the bean pits, and for soybeans, last year it was 4.5%, and now it's 4.2%. So it hasn't changed so dramatically.
Yeah, and the change has been from what we started out, you know, earlier in the summer thinking our carryout was going to be. And I think we were up there in that, 15-16% stocks to use. But it just continued to decline. I think I just keep going back to the fact that somehow we have to figure out a way to reduce usage. And it's just with energy prices where they're at, with livestock prices, as Chuck talked about, where they're at least some in the cattle. It just looks to me like it's going to be pretty tough to do that job.
Well, live cattle futures, speaking of which, Chuck, February had a high of 110.50, a low at 106.30. They were up $3, 109.37.5, a settlement price. The January feeders at $125.60 for 100 pounds, up $4. Lean hogs were up 10, 81.22.5, the high, the low at 79.05. Settlement price there at $79.52.5. Is that for what reasons?
The cow herd's the smallest in many years, Todd, and there's still a few of us out here that like to eat a good steak or a hamburger. So it's a numbers game, and I don't think the producers are in the mood really to save those heifers back. It's a long time till you get a calf that you're going to be able to sell. So I think it's supply against a good demand.
You know, and to add in, you know, in commodity theory, we always talk about prices being determined by demand at the margin. In other words, demand, you know, is tends to be relatively volatile. And over the course of the last week and a half, people started to talk more seriously about the impact the Australian flooding is going to have potentially on their ability to export beef and what that's going to mean to beef supplies here in the U.S. in particular, as well as the world. And also in Europe, we know we got the dioxin problem with some meats, and there's some anxiousness that. And I think maybe on top of that, to add a little bit of icing on the cake maybe, Chinese President Hu Jintao is going to be in town next week, and there's some ideas, you know, they're going to sign some agreements to buy things, and there's some thoughts in the meat trade. Maybe that might include some beef and or pork.
So who is it that blinks this time around in terms of demand? We've got the livestock producers who have already liquidated, or at least it appears the beef cattle folks have, and they've got higher prices. The hog prices have managed to move up. Ethanol seems to have gotten over several hurdles in the last month politically, and they continue to move along, I think, at pretty decent margins. And the export folks are still in the marketplace, both for corn and soybeans.
Well, it's really, you know, there isn't a pat answer when you start looking at demand. When you step back and you look at past bull markets historically, and I'll even reach all the way back and tell a little bit about my age into the 70s. You know, it's the little subtleties that you see change on you. There's never anything big that slaps you in the face. And unfortunately, you know, by the time you figured out that something has happened to demand, you're about 3 weeks down the road and prices are about 15 to 20% off their peaks, and you go, oh, why didn't I see that? You know, and so demand looking for changes is so difficult. It's just a game of trying to find an accumulation of little bits and pieces that really leads you into it. There's some around. Do they mean much at this point? Are they going to have impact on corn and bean markets? Who knows?
I think we can look all the way back to when wheat made a high of $25. What stopped it there? There wasn't any more wheat to buy. So if you can't buy it at any price, there's a price where it doesn't matter. So I think we're in a scenario where we're going to find out, again, where the last man standing or who's got the money, and there is enough money in the world to drive these prices higher.
You say 765 is pipeline, and we'll get that to that point.
I think we're already there and headed that direction. Yeah, I think that's what the market's doing. And as Bill said, this uptrending market, we keep working higher.
I think Dale made an excellent point there. And to just follow up on that a little bit, going back to the 70s, it was hard, but it's even harder in today's market because of the volatility and all the outside things that we have. An example this week, soybean basis backed off, you know, after we saw the big up day on Wednesday in the cash market. Was that because prices were higher and they could buy beans easier, or was it the processor just saying, you know, that we pretty well got our needs satisfied here? So it's hard to find those intricacies in the market sometimes.
Think about new crop for me just a bit. And February, crop insurance month, of course, setting crop insurance and the acre program as well. Are there things that producers should be doing or not doing at this point with new crop corn and soybean?
Well, I think that at this point you have to be pretty patient here. But going to your point on the crop insurance, I think the first part of the marketing plan should definitely be maximum coverage on your crop insurance, just from the simple fact that that's going to be the most efficient coverage that you're going to be able to get as far as any kind of downside protection or upside protection is in the crop insurance.
I think the main point that we would like to make to producers, you need to be flexible, and there's lots of tools at not that high of a cost that can lock in a great profit, so you got to be flexible.
You know, the one thing I think people do need to sit back, though, and we are in a game of risk management. And, you know, when you look at the price of December corn today, and if you have 185, 190 bushel land, you're talking about grosses that are 1,000 an acre. To not sell something to me says that you're not managing risk real well either.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded on the 14th day of January. We'll return in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with the president of AgriSource Company in Chicago, Illinois, Dan Bossy.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a brief lull in the weather the first part of the month, winter weather returned to Illinois this week. Temperatures this week averaged from near normal in northern Illinois to as much as 7 degrees below normal in far southern Illinois. The weather started out fairly seasonable this week, but a series of cold fronts ushered increasingly colder air into the state. By Thursday, temperatures struggled to get through the teens across most of Illinois. Most of Illinois was snow-free for a little over a week since the first of the year, but a storm moving through the Midwest this week brought the white stuff back. All but the far southern tip of Illinois now has snow on the ground. The heaviest snow to occur with this storm was actually in west-central Illinois, where 4 to 6 inches of snow was common. The remainder of northern and central Illinois picked up anywhere from 1 to 4 inches. We are not going to see much change in the weather over the next week. Cold air will remain entrenched over Illinois and will likely be reinforced at least a couple of times next week. The strongest surge of cold air should come around midweek. A low-pressure system is forecast to move out of the Central Plains and through the Ohio Valley Monday into Tuesday. If this occurs as currently depicted, that will bring more snow, especially to central and southern Illinois. Much colder air will then plunge southward through the state once the low passes to the east. And winter continues. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, January the 14th, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. Our guest is the Market Research Manager for AgriSource Company. Dan Bossy is also the president of the company. He founded in 1987. You can find more on Dan at agresource.com. Mr. Bossy, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, you're very welcome, Mr. Gleason. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were at the Ag Connect program last week in Atlanta. What did you hear from most of the producers?
Most of the producers were telling the story about how they sold corn and beans a little too early, and I think that was kind of confirmed in the stocks report as we look at on-farm and off-farm totals, how they're trying to scale into positions going forward. And, you know, it's probably looking in prior years the right thing to be doing, but the message I kept and wanted to leave with all of them is this is not a year you want to let go of your upside potential. So I understand managing downside risk, but I believe this one is different than the one we had in 08 and 09 and is different than we've seen at least going back to the 1970s.
Dan, as you're looking at the 2011 crop, and we've talked a little bit about the demand and the supply side of things. How many acres do you feel like we need to pull into the corn and soybean production to give us some kind of comfort level going into the spring and summer?
Well, that's part of the dilemma I talked about. If we go through and look at a total crop need, and I now throw in things like cotton, oats, sorghum, canola, rice, all those kinds of things, right, we believe we need somewhere in the vicinity of 9 to 11 million total acres. And then if I go through my grids on a state-by-state or even county-by-county basis, I can maybe come up with 4.7 to 5.2 million. And so this may be the first time that arable acres available to the market may be rather limited, and if I don't start getting some meaningful moisture throughout the plains, that even worsens the situation. So that's why I say this is one of those years that I don't know how high is high if we get greater than expected demand or some kind of supply dislocation due to Mother Nature.
Dan, I know they talked at the conference quite a bit about world demand in those countries, the BRIC countries. Could you speak a little bit about what you saw and heard down there about that?
Yeah, I offered some graphics in which if we're looking at BRIC, or by that standpoint, Brazil, Russia, India, and China livestock demand, it's just exploding. The Chinese pork market reached new record highs this week. We continue to hear rumors about possible meat sales to China. I think all of that is good, and it's part of the parcel in this whole dynamic in terms of agriculture. So, we're now exporting 1 out of every 5 hogs in this country, 1 out of every 10 cattle. I think those numbers will continue to improve, and it's that fight at the meat counter between the consumer and the world importer that I think is so important and is going to keep grain prices somewhat more elevated than most people expect.
Dan, this is Dale. I want to ask you a little bit because Friday we had China come in, raise reserve requirements again. I think that was like the third or the fourth time they've raised their discount rate twice. Do you think that they're going to really be serious about trying to rein in inflation and slowing their economy down to a more manageable pace? And if so, what kind of impact is this going to have?
You know, Daryl, if we go back and look at the time frame to 07, 08, they had inflation levels and interest rates and reserve requirements much worse than today, and their economy still and it was able to grow up until the what I call the great credit bubble and leveraging, which came from the Western world. I think they're trying to slow the economy. There's no doubt about it. They really don't have any choice. But I do believe that one of the problems the Chinese run into, and what is becoming more apparent in our research, is what we call Chinese restocking. The Chinese have been selling off their state reserves of veg oils and grains and even meats here for the longest time. They're getting to some levels now that I know is concerning some of their political leaders. And at some point, I think they want to turn to the world market. Remember, China has $2.3 trillion of currency and make some purchases. The problem we have now is, how does China turn to the world corn market? I don't think they could buy 3 million metric tons if they had to, unless it was in a new crop position. And so this is creating some new anxiety, I think, for the Chinese. And so they will slow things down, but I don't think it's to a degree that's really going to cut their commodity demand to a level that changes world dynamics.
Can I have you take up U.S. wheat acres just a bit more? So your discussion early on suggested that if things stay dry out west, that arable acres will be of some concern, even if they were wanting to tear those up, that it might not be worth putting a second crop into. What about the soft red winter wheat acres in the Midwest, Illinois, Missouri, Indiana? Those numbers were higher. Will we see double crop beans that have any kind of impact?
I would hope so. I mean, the one message we have for every farmer is you need to be planting every acre along with your front yard. And when you plant your front yard, I want you to use nitrogen and phosphate and everything that you can so that we get a yield. We need that kind of production this year. And there may be some acres that are plowed under, and the wheat is seen as a green fertilizer, if you will. But I'm the kind of guy right now, as I look at my global numbers, I'm thinking the wheat market may have a double digit in front of it sometime as we turn the calendar to Valentine's Day, as we start to become worried about dryness in China, the plains. I don't believe the Russians will be back as an exporter until 2012 at the earliest from my discussions with their people over there. And so with all that being said, to me, the cheap market at the moment is going to be wheat, and especially if we get Chicago below $7.50 a bushel. So I think if you have $15 beans and $6.80 or $7 corn, $10 wheat with any kind of weather problem just kind of follows along, and it seems to me that whatever hemisphere we're looking at, it's hard not to have a weather problem in the northern hemisphere. There's wheat planted in so many spots sometime as we look in the spring and summer.
So as we're moving forward here, Dan, what are some of the signs that we should be looking at from a demand standpoint that maybe would be a red flag to us?
Well, the first thing I look at is on the livestock side, we can watch weaker broiler sets and chick placements every week. We're still running even with a year ago, maybe 1% on some weeks. I watch weekly ethanol grind to see where we're sitting in terms of that EAI number, and I think that's important to watch. And then I watch things like monthly cattle placements. This month they're supposed to be up anywhere between 17 and 18%. So from a broad perspective, there may be inklings, as you gentlemen suggested, but I don't see anything yet that just jumps off the page to tell me that prices have reached level that is really starting to cause people to rear back. And I think it's ethanol and corn, which is a big one. We got to get plants or blenders to start using the RINs. In my work, that probably takes a corn price somewhere between $6.80 and $7.20, assuming crude oil stays here at around $91 a barrel.
Well, when you look at the carryouts dwindling in both corn and beans, Dan, which market, which crop do you think is going to lose out going into spring? We're not going to have enough bean acres, or we're not going to have enough corn acres. Which one do you see at this point in time?
I think our producer surveys tell us that farmers are leaning more towards corn. The nice fall allowed them to get fertilizer down. They like the opportunity with corn. However, capital to plant the crop, when you're talking now something north of $430 an acre, gets to be a constraint. But nonetheless, I think corn will win out. The problem is I needed somewhere around 4 to 5 million acres of corn. I think we get 2. I think the bean acreage stays steady, and then, of course, we've got the 2 million acres extra of SRW wheat in the Midwest. So in a broad perspective, like I said, I can get up to that 4.5 or a little north of there, but it's just not enough.
You know, one of the popular issues that was talked about back at the end of December and even for the month of December was the idea that we were going to have another round of big investment money starting to flow into commodities again. Do you still think that's going to be there, or do you start to get a sense that maybe that's going to be a bit more timid than it was because you start to hear people talking now about the risk-reward game in commodities?
I am still seeing from my clients, our biggest growth has come from New York and London, where they're still looking at agricultural space very acutely, and they've got a lot more to put in this. So I'm not seeing a slowdown, and they've been investing almost every day since the beginning of the year. I think they keep coming at this stuff. And if you give us a weather phenomena to go along with it, I think there's all of these ETFs out there which offer Joe Q Public to come in and buy an ETF like CORN, corn, which will only push more futures business into the market.
Very quickly, take the RINs back up for me. I think there are about 400 bushels worth of corn RINs that are available. Repeat that price where you thought that those might come into play. I thought that seemed fairly high and might be something worth coming back to.
Well, Todd, what I'm using on the RINs, and you're right, there's about, I think, 390 million bushels. I'm using RINs, and I'm using that. If we go back to 95, 96, we had to see ethanol facilities lose about 20% on margin for them to really shut down and send the employees home and sell the cash market back. I believe these plants now need to lose about 10% for them to utilize the RINs. And so in our research, that's where we're coming up with that price of $6.80 to $7.20.
Thank you so much for being with us. Dan Bossi is with Ag Resource Company. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. You can visit him online at agresource.com. Now a final word from our panelist in studio, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
It's an exciting time. Make sure that you enjoy these markets that we are having. Sell and protect when you sell. Small steps, I think, is important. And expect volatility because it's going to be there.
Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette.
Be flexible. If you sell the cash, buy calls back. If you don't want to sell cash, use put options.
And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington.
One word of warning here. I got some relatively important cyclic lows coming up here late February and into March for both corn and beans. So get ready for some volatility ahead at a minimum.
That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.